Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Sounds Good Radio. I'm your host, Shriver.
Hi, and I'm Big Neek.
Big Neek. And we are coming back to you with the Black Print Part 2.
Part 2.
So where we left off, we told you guys we were going to talk about this some more. So I'm going to hand this episode over to my co-host, Neek, and we're going to get straight into it.
All right. We're going to kick off where we last left off. We were ended on the origins of the banjo, and I talked about how Beyonce integrated the banjo heavily in the Cowboy Carter. And then we're going to go ahead and talk about some of the music that was being, about how Black music was being received at the time, mm-hmm. and how it is currently being received today.
Mm-hmm.
And we also talked about the OG cowboy and that influence on Westerns and the instrumentation, which is how we got into the banjo.
Yes.
So today we are going to basically segue more into the music part of it.
Okay.
We talked about the banjo and how it was considered to be a Black instrument. Mm-hmm. So in that time, music and the consumption of music was very segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And because of segregation, the places, the venues that you could see these performances were also segregated.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot, immediately, obviously, most of the venues and the most popular venues were only for white people, and Black people could not even go. So mm-hmm. that's where we had the creation of the Chitlin' Circuit.
Okay.
The Chitlin' Circuit is a network of venues for Black audiences to enjoy Black performers during the Jim Crow era. The Jim Crow era is between 1865 and 1960.
Mm-hmm.
So, and during the Jim Crow era, music like the blues, jazz, and the beginnings of rock and roll were starting around this time.
Can I just ask you a question to clarify? When you say Jim Crow era, is that referring to segregation, or is Jim Crow a musician?
There were Jim Crow laws.
Okay.
There was actually a set of laws, which were segregation laws, that you cannot drink from the same water fountain.
Okay.
Which is why we had separate water fountains. You could not, Black people could not eat at the same restaurants. And if they could, they had to either go to the back,
mm-hmm.
order, and then they would have to eat in the back alley or in the back of the restaurant. Most of the time they were more so of like a to-go type situation. Mm-hmm. You cannot come and you cannot eat in here. You cannot eat at our bars. There were certain places that you could only, I just watched a movie today called The Green Book. The Green Book is basically a book made for African Americans of where you, it's kind of like a atlas,
mm-hmm.
Of where you can go and safely go. Because segregation was a dangerous period, like any of the times, honestly, for Black people, it was dangerous for us to go certain places, and we were not welcome.
Okay.
So there was a book that would tell you, like, hey, this is a place where you can go get something to eat that will welcome you.
Okay.
This is a place that you can go and get gas that will welcome you.
Gotcha.
This is a place where you can find lodging, and they won't kick you out or treat you wrong. Or these are the places that you don't need to stop in. These are sundown towns.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically kind of like a roadmap of the where to for Black people during that time.
Okay.
So with
the Chitlin' Circuit.
Yes, the Chitlin' Circuit basically provided a safe and acceptable space for Black musicians, comedians, and audiences.
Okay.
The Chitlin' Circuit was a collection of clubs, theaters, and dance halls, mm-hmm. that stretched from Miami to Boston, all the way as far west as Texas. And it was specifically for Black people, African Americans.
Okay.
So speaking on the name Chitlin' Circuit, I want to get down to the basis of that, of what is a chitlin'.
Mm-hmm.
A chitlin' is a food most commonly made from the small intestines of pigs. During slavery, of course, nobody wants the small intestines or the intestines of pigs. So it was the scraps, and the scraps were given to the slaves, mm-hmm. to make do with what they can. So most of the time during slaves, all you were able, during slavery, all you were able to eat was what was left over. The scraps, the less desirable, the things that were thrown away. And from those scraps, even collard greens, you have the main part of the green, and then the collard green was the less desirable part of it. So a lot of what we call today's soul food were basically the scraps that we were given that we made something out of it.
So I never knew that about collard greens, that it what African Americans eat was the throwaway part of the head of lettuce. If you don't know what a collard is, it's a type of lettuce, I assume. And so it's like almost like the butt that nobody wants to eat. I never knew that.
Yes. And that's why you have to, if you can know about cooking greens, you have to cook them for a long time because they were tougher. So that's why you have to cook them longer, because that's why it was undesirable, because it took longer to cook. So these were the less desirable parts of the pig and the scraps. Also, pig's feet was really popular. Hog jaws. In a video that we were just making, we were talking about about neck bones. I mean, nobody wanted the neck, so we ended up with the neck bones, and we cooked them down, seasoned them up, added some flavor to them, and enjoyed. Made the most of what we had. Those scraps were given to the slaves, while the better cuts went to the slave masters, who were thus then said to be living high on the hog. A lot of catchphrases, I don't want to say catchphrases, that people use sometimes have a meaning that is far deeper than a lot of us may know. So the chitlin was solely for the slave and the less desirables who made something just for us. So when it came down to the chitlin circuit, this was something just for us. These venues were basically the less desirable locations. More so, you've heard of the terminology hole in the wall, because none of the main venues that were stadiums or concert halls, Black people were not welcome to be there. So we had to make our own small places that were inviting to our artists and our audiences. Some prominent chitlin circuit artists that a lot of you may know, of course, started off in the chitlin circuit. Al Green, Ike and Tina Turner started in the chitlin circuit. Aretha Franklin, a lot of the Motown artists started in the chitlin circuit. Ray Charles, James Brown, Little Richard, Etta James, Diana Ross, Jimi Hendrix. These big names that we know today were not even able to even go to a auditorium or a venue and perform. They had to be only in designated Black only venues to perform and to have their art be consumed by us.
And I think that's so interesting to me, because excuse me, in this day and age, we think that slavery is so far removed and that segregation is so far removed, but these are names that we listen to still today. Like, these are legendary musicians. I mean, Aretha Franklin, I did not know that she started her career in the chitlin circuit because she wasn't allowed in white spaces.
We are less than 60 years separated from segregation. And it doesn't really blow my mind, but it kind of blows my mind, because there was once a time where you and I would not even be able to go to school together. So if it wasn't for these huge steps and all the movements that were taking place in this time to fight for our rights to get to that point, we would have never even crossed paths. And to see today in 2025, those basic rights are being taken away from us, is heartbreaking. And I am fearful of the next generation that is going to have to come up and reap the consequences of the way that the world is shaping currently in 2025. Because it seems like we're far removed, but we are not. A lot of the people that were born and active in the segregation area are still in positions of power today.
Are running the country.
Yes. So the reason why we have these slogans of Make America Great Again is because they want to take us back to when the white man was supreme.
Absolutely.
And everything that is being done currently in the legislation that is being passed in the last...
Not even 2 months.
2 months. I was going to say the last 8 years, because we had 4 years and then we had a brief step back, but I feel like we just kept the ball rolling. But mm-hmm. all the things that have been done is to revert us back to where we were, even as far as abortion rights. But I have, again, we, y'all should be, we're on episode five.
I don't know. We can't keep up.
That my ADD is already off the rails. So let's ring it back
we'll
in.
We'll refocus. It's okay.
I apologize.
Everything, it's all connected. Yes. So it makes sense.
So some notable Black artists were country artists at the time.
Okay.
And again, they had to, even though they had country music, they still could not perform it openly in these venues with the other country artists. Mm. So a notable country artist, Mr. Leslie Riddle, he was a Black and blues gospel guitar player and a folklorist who he influenced the great Carter family, which was a big family in country. It was about maybe 4 kids and 2 parents, and they were like a singing group, a country singing group. And he was the inspiration for them. He was very influential to them because he was their manager. A creative director and manager. So he had a huge imprint on their image and the music that they were putting out once they hit mainstream. And again, this is the Carter family in the 1920s.
Was the Carter family African American?
No, this was a white family.
Okay, so not related to the Carters that we know now, that was the reason we started this whole series.
No.
Okay. So a Black man was a manager, creative director, teacher, if you will, mm-hmm. for a prominent white family in country music.
Correct.
Okay.
Another big name in country music in the beginnings was Charlie Pride. Now, Mr. Charlie Pride had a unconventional intro into the country music genre. He actually started his career as a Negro League baseball player in the early 1950s. And then after his baseball career kind of fizzled out, he went into country music. And he also became the country music's first major Black superstar. Mm. So Charlie Pride, when he was 14, his mom purchased him his first guitar, and he taught himself how to play the guitar. Through his love for music, he knew that he loved for music, and that's what he wanted to do. But because it was hard to get, as any people, it was hard to get into the music industry. But he also had a talent where he could actually was really, really good at baseball. So he went into baseball, but his love was always for music. And he actually did pretty well in baseball. In 1952, he pitched for the Memphis Red Sox of the Negro League. And then he moved a couple of teams, but he got his basis as a baseball player, but his love for music started from as a child. So he moved around a couple teams. He got injured. So how he really got his step onto the music scene was, of course, he was getting paid little to nothing playing on the Negro Leagues. So for extra $10, the team manager will give him if he would sing for 15 minutes for entertainment before the baseball games. So, of course, you're only getting paid $10 to play. You get an extra $10 just to sing for the crowd. Of course, he loved that and jumped all over it. Mm.
So I have written down, because I saw this note and I wanted to do a little comparison of like what $10 in the 1950s is compared to what that would be equivalent mm-hmm. to today. So that's roughly $135 to be entertainment value for these sporting events. And we know someone in the entertainment industry isn't going to go sing at a baseball game for $135. That's laughable.
It was to sing and to play. So, yeah, talk about a doubleheader.
Yeah, that's...
So, eventually, he got hurt, and he was unable to play anymore. So, he then went on and shopped around a demo, and because, I mean, he really could sing. And a lot of people were just coming to the baseball games just to hear him perform for that extra 15 minutes and that extra $10 for him. So he had a little buzz going for himself from the baseball fans that were seeing him. So he made a demo, shopped around his demo, and he was eventually picked up by RCA Records. So he was known for his deep, raspy baritone voice. And they loved it. And sometimes when you have a talent, it's undeniable. And for him, his talent was undeniable, which eventually helped him break into the country music scene. So, like I said before, he became the first major Black superstar. The period of his greatest musical success was from 1969 to 1975. He was the top selling artist for RCA Records. Elvis Presley was also on that record label at the time, and he outsold Elvis Presley as well. So that was a big feat to be able to outsell Elvis Presley.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's, I mean, Elvis is one of the most recognizable. Yeah, absolutely. But we know now he profited off the backs of.
Stole all that too. But
that's another episode for another day.
So Charlie Pride is known to have 52 top 10 hits on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart, of 30 of which made it to number one.
That's insane. So, in not even a 6 year period, he had 52 songs hit the top 10 charts, 30 of which were number one.
Correct.
That's crazy.
So he was a star, for sure. So much so, the CMAs, he won the Entertainer of the Year Award in 1971. And he also got a Grammy for the Best Country Vocal Performance for the song Male in 1972. Charlie Pride is one of three African-American members of the Grand Ole Opry. The other two is DeFord Bailey and Darius Rucker. So just the fact that there are only three men in the
history of country music that have made it to the stage of the Grand Ole Opry.
He was inducted in 2000.
Wow. So years after his career.
Yes.
Years after the height of his career.
In 1967, he became the first performer to perform at the Grand Ole Opry. So in 1967, he was the first person to perform there. And then 33 years later, he was finally inducted into the Hall of Fame.
So why is it that artists don't get these Hall of Fame honors until after the peak of their career? Is that typical, or is it just because, like, it took them that long to prove themselves in their career?
I think it could be both. But I feel like a lot of the time, a lot of these artists get their flower a little bit too late.
Yes.
I am 100% with recognize them and show your appreciation for them while they're here.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sure there are a lot of artists, I'm sure we've seen many, many biopics where artists have had great careers and then they've kind of gotten down on in the dumps about themselves because their careers are over and they never really feel appreciated. And then it's not until they are long gone do you finally have these tributes and people saying these kind words and showing their appreciation. And I feel like it's important to, while we have the opportunity, while they're alive, let these people be able to see the imprint that they have on us. I also feel like when it comes to country music, sometimes the acceptance of artist of color, now it's the popular thing to do. I don't feel like sometimes it is, a lot of people feel like this is the right thing to do or this is fair, it was earned. But I think right now everything is very, the hot button right now is being inclusive and And because everybody wants to be inclusive, well, let's give these Black people a nod when they should have had this nod to begin with. I love that. Now that we're starting to look at that and say, all right, we should have done this, but shoulda, coulda, woulda, it could have been done when it was appropriate while the person was here.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, I guess better late than never.
Right.
So in 2020, the CMAs announced that Pride would receive the Willie Nelson Lifetime Achievement Award at the 54th Country Music Awards. And I feel like the CMAs really had a nice statement for him. And they said, Charlie Pride is the epitome of a trailblazer. Few other artists have grown country music rich heritage and led to the advancement of country music around the world like Charlie. His distinctive voice has created a timeless legacy that continues to echo through the country community today. We would not be more excited to honor Charlie with one of the CMA's highest accolades. Also, Charlie Pride really was a baddie because not only was he getting awards as a country music artist, he also has a prominent presence in baseball, which was his first love to begin mm-hmm. with. He's a part owner of the Texas Rangers. Mm. He sang the national anthem during Game 5 of the 2010 World Series.
Okay.
When the Rangers play the Giants. And in 2021, the Rangers actually named their training field in Arizona after him. It's called Charlie Pride Field. So I think that's really, really beautiful.
Yeah. Still loves his baseball.
Yes.
He loves his singing.
Baseball, so he's probably one of the first, but I also want to shout out Mr. DeFord Bailey. Mm-hmm. I said that Charlie Pride was one of the first performers at the Grand Ole Opry, but DeFord Bailey, which is a founding member of the Grand Ole Opry, which was a black man, is where it immediately started, but then Charlie Pride was immediately after that.
Wow. Never knew that.
So he got the recognition, but I also want to point out there are a lot of prominent country artists that may or may not have stole their acts from black artists. So controversially, Hank Williams is a very well-known country artist.
Mm-hmm.
But he got his start. He learned how to play the guitar. His mentor's name was Rufus T-Tot Payne. Payne was a black musician from Greenville, Alabama. Hank Williams met him when he was 8 years old. His mom paid him to teach him guitar for food, in exchange for food. So he was his music teacher and basically taught Hank Williams everything that he knows about playing the guitar. And I believe Hank Williams is notable for his guitar playing.
Yeah.
His musicality on that. And he learned that from a black man.
Hmm.
He taught him how to play the chords, the rhythms, and sing hard time Southern blues. Payne also helped Williams overcome his shyness, helped him break out of his shell so he could be able to shine as a big star that he later become. Mm. He's also, like I said, exposed him because they had a mentor-mentee relationship. He was able to expose him to the music like the blues and other artists. And how it also showed him how black people were fusing hillbilly and folk music and blues all together. And that expanded to the black and the white audiences.
Hmm.
Also, Johnny Cash stole some of his influences from his mentor, which was Gus Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
They met in Memphis in 1954. Gus Cannon actually played a lot of instruments. He played the banjo, the trombone, the fiddle, the piano, and the guitar. While Cannon was mentoring Johnny Cash, Johnny Cash was able to learn the culture and the style techniques of black country music. And the most notable style, which was called guitar finger picking, that is a skill that Johnny Cash learned from his mentor, Gus Cannon.
So there seems to be a theme of these notable white historical mm-hmm. musicians mm-hmm. all being taught and trained by black men.
Mm-hmm.
At any point in their careers between Hank Williams or Johnny Cash or Elvis Presley, did any of them give credit to their mentors?
The only person who gave credit to the mentor was Hank Williams.
Okay.
He credited Mr. T-Tot as his music teacher that basically taught him everything that he needed to know. Hank Williams never openly or publicly acknowledged it, but his son paid tribute. I'm sorry, I'm still talking about Hank Williams. I apologize.
That's fine.
Hank Williams did pay homage, and his son also paid homage to T-Tot. Hank Williams Jr. has a song called the T-Tot Song on his I'll Marry a Club album.
Oh, okay. So Hank Williams and his son, Hank Williams Jr., both credited T-Tot.
Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, they claim they did it themselves.
Right.
So.
And we know their fans will say that they did it themselves, but that is simply not true. So
at this point, it wasn't necessarily called country music. It's still black people music, or the black people's version of country music. It was called hillbilly music, and it would later be renamed to country music. It became the music of the South. Hillbilly music was not solely centered around the banjo. The first hillbilly artist drew inspiration from slave spirituals, field songs, hymns, and the blues, which itself has black origins. After World War I, hillbilly music was basically rebranded as country music and commercialized. Big record labels wanted to sell country music, but couldn't do so if it was integrated, because nobody wanted to hear anything from anybody black.
Right.
So thus, black artists on previous famous records received no recognition. So that's a lot of what happened with Elvis Presley. On the Chitlin' Circus, you had a lot of artists that were making great songs, and they were hitting, and they were literally... breaking the cultural bounds, because they were popular. Sometimes you can't deny talent. So when a song is good, it's good and it's catchy, and it would hit the airwaves and they would love it. But because there was a black artist, they would just find a white artist to remake it and just give it a new name.
Right.
So like Hound Dog by Elvis Presley. That was originally Mahalia Jackson, I think.
I'm not sure. We could Google it real quick.
I'm pretty sure Hound Dog was... originally sung by a black woman, and Elvis Presley redid it. A lot of the songs have been redone just because it was a black artist and they put a white face on them. Sometimes they would literally just keep the same vocals and just put a white person's face on the record. So
to make really?
Yes. But most of the time they would just re-record it. And then the black artist basically, the erasure of the black culture.
Absolutely. Okay, so what I'm pulling up is the original singer of Hound Dog is Big Mama Thornton.
Big Mama Thornton.
And yes. If I do say so myself, because I have heard her version, it's better. And it makes more sense for a woman to be singing it.
Correct. But so who cares when you're still in it and you're Elvis Presley? You can just shake your hips and make the girl swoon.
Yeah.
Which was also something that he learned from being around black people and taking in the culture. The swiveling of the hips was very taboo and very tacky, and that's only something that the animals did. And him breaking in to doing that, it was just very taboo. Like, why are you swinging your
hips? Right.
Why are you doing that? Oh my god.
But the girls fawned over him.
But that was something that he stole from people.
Okay.
Let's see. Where was I at?
You were at hillbilly music being transformed into country music.
So the big record labels wanted to sell country music, but they couldn't do so if it was integrated. Thus, black artists on previous famous records received no recognition, and the covers were sold with white stand-ins. Suddenly, country music became marketed as white music. White audiences then adopted country music as their own, and as they moved north, white Southerners brought country with them, further spreading the notion that country was white music. Meanwhile, black artists, musicians, and their contributions were effectively erased in the white mainstream from their own genre.
So basically, country music is whitewashed.
Yes, the state that it is in right now is very white. Well, I wouldn't say right now, because again, with Cowboy Carter and the new emerging black artists, but it has been
white country wash. Music as we know it.
Yes, has
to be white America, Southern white people, cowboys, hillbillies, whatever, you know, bluegrass. It all originated from African Americans.
Yes. Country music often gets dismissed as being simple and superficial, and about getting drunk, driving their truck, or a scorned lover digging their key into the side of his pretty little souped up four whip. Hey, anyways, sorry.
We don't like her. She's a Trump supporter.
Still, another common theme of country music is to tell a story of the hardships of life. Even Johnny Cash's most popular song titled Hurt, but when it is overlooked by white Americans, is that the hardship of is the core of the black experience in the United States. So you're going to, most country music is talking about the hardships and what you have gone through. Mm-hmm. And of course, again, if you look back in history, that's what the Negro spiritual was. That's what the hymns were. Mm-hmm. That's what the field songs were. Yeah. And it was just spinned to fit the narrative that it was, I guess, intended for.
Mm-hmm. My leg's falling asleep.
Okay. Due to the fact that country music would not exist without the Black experience and the overlooked yet tireless work of Black musicians. In reality, American culture was built off the back of Black people, and it's time to properly recognize the history, give credit where it's due, and support Black country artists. I feel like Beyonce's Cowboy Carter did what it was supposed to do. I don't believe that it was supposed to just come and win every country award that it could possibly have, and she could just sweep the CMAs or the country music category, but at least shine the light and brought attention to the fact that we have a space there. Mm-hmm. We are welcome in any genre of music, and to say that we're exempt from being a part of country music is asinine, because we are where country music started. Mm-hmm. There is African and Black culture deeply intertwined in the foundation of what we today call country music. And I think what Beyonce did was beautiful. It opened doors for a lot of up and coming people and really shined a light into what country music is and what country music has to offer. Music is not always exclusive. Music is not exclusive to one person. It's inclusive to everyone. So it doesn't matter what color you are, even what kind of music, as long as your art is touching somebody and resonating with someone, that is all that matters. And what your race, color, or creed is has absolutely nothing to do with it, and nobody should be excluded from it. If you have an art and you want to put that out and share that with the world in whichever way you want to, whether it be country, rap, R&B, opera, muchacha, whatever, you should be able to do so. Mm-hmm. And be able to do so freely and without feeling like you're being judged and scorned. And I feel like Beyonce was unnecessarily, the magnifying glass was put onto her unnecessarily. She should have just been accepted and everybody took it for what it was.
And just enjoyed it.
The rave, the pomp and circumstances behind it was so unnecessary to me. But I definitely understand making a statement and making something big out of it, because if it's so taboo for me as a Black woman to put out a country music album, of course I'm going to go on tour, and of course I'm going to run this into the ground, because you're going to eat it, because I did it. And shout out to you, Beyonce. We love you, Queen Bee. The bees are buzzing.
Well, that was beautifully said. And I thank you for sharing this knowledge with me and teaching me something. And I hope everybody out there was open ears and learned something today, because that's what it's all about, you know, is learning from our past mistakes and moving forward. Yes. So we thank you so much for joining us. We hope to see you back next week. And that's it for now.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.